Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a sustainability presentation from April 2017. Ms. Susanna Waltz, owner of EcoCircle Concept, presents Biodegradability, the Nonplusultra.
Hello, everybody. My name is Susanna Waltz from EcoCircle Concept. And I guess you're expecting me to deliver arguments if biodegradability is or is not a good solution. Yeah, I won't do that. I will, however, put you in a position to analyze the situation on your own and come up with good assessments. Because that is what I do for a living. I educate designers and companies to develop sustainable product solutions. So I promise you that at the end of the presentation, you will be able to come up with very good assessments on your own. Okay. So as this presentation is very comprehensive, I brought a few notes. I hope you don't mind me using them. So how can you know when biodegradability is a good idea? Before we start the assessment, let's just have a quick look on what happens during the biodegradation process. We have different kinds of waste treatment. As we have so much waste, the treatments, we mostly try to reduce the amount of waste. We do that, for example, by burning the waste. Composting, however, does not try to reduce the amount of waste in the first place. The aim is to produce a high-quality humus product for soil improvement and fertilization. That means, to put it shortly, we try to keep carbon and nutrients inside the mass. With such high-quality compost, we can replace peat, which we use when we need fertile soil. And this replacement is good for many reasons. You see, peat is sort of a carbon storage. And when we are mining peat and treat the ground, we release the carbon, which in form of carbon dioxide contributes to the greenhouse effect. Furthermore, as everybody knows, moorlands are unique and very valuable ecosystems, so we should protect them and not harvest them. Using compost also can replace industrially produced nitrogen fertilizer and scarce phosphates. Biological waste treatment is not free of emissions, of course. It comes, for example, with greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, and methane. That is, however, not a major issue, because those emissions come from renewable resources and thus do not count as climate relevant. We have to be realistic, though. This kind of composting is a complex technology, and it's not like you could just stuff your worn out clothes into your garden compost. Such a system of biodegradable apparel comes with absolute freedom from harmful substances, comprehensive collecting systems, and adjusted composting technology. But for the sake of argument, let's not worry about that right now. So all in all, biodegradability shows lots of upsides and just few downsides. And it looks like a very reasonable way to go. And having come that far, most people just stop analyzing. But in the reality of eco-design, that is the point when the analyzing actually just begins. And let me tell you, there are very few designers and companies who are willing and able to do this process. And today I want to inspire you and to encourage you to get into this process. So what do you have to do to come up with solid answers worthy of an eco-designer? Actually, it's very simple. Those three steps are actually everything you need to get a good sustainable product strategy. Step one, ask what it's all about. And step two, doubt one-dimensional and all too facile statements. And step three, think holistic and get all the information you can possibly get. So, step one. This sheet doesn't look like it shouldn't looking like, but I hope it will work. No, no, it doesn't work, okay. The first step is all about considering the situation. So find out what kind of problem do we have to solve in the first place. And it mostly comes back to one specific situation. And you will be surprised because the exact nature of the situation is known by very few people. Some people say that the planet is too crowded and that we are just too many. And that is kind of true. Have a look on how we have been like 4.5 billion people in the 1980s and how the population has increased since. But when we say we are too many people, we are mostly referring to the 7.5 billion people who are living on this planet today. But the problem is actually much more urgent than you can see here. Because the actual problems are not caused by the mass of the people, but by those who are wealthy. And this is the smaller part of 3 billion people still. But now before we go on, let me quickly explain the chart. On this sheet, you can see the allocation of global wealth. On the left side, people barely have access to clean drinking water, food, basic hygiene, and let alone medical care. And going a little to the right, people have access to basic education and first possibilities for economic autonomy. At about the middle of the graph begins what one would call a global middle class. And that's not yet about 3 billion people are part of the global middle class, the average resource-consuming and emission-emitting wealthy citizen. Now, where does the resource consumption and the emissions come from? Partly, just partly, from our personal lifestyle, like using a car, flying into the holidays, or the consumption of energy, like for heating or cooling our homes, or buying, of course, customer goods. But it is also caused by the infrastructure we enjoy, like supermarkets, medical care, and hospitals, public transport, barrier-free facilities, and so on. And this wealthy life here at the right side of the graph is the cause for our resource problems. We use much more than our share of the resources. And would everybody live like we do, we already would need about 2.5 planets. Now, that everybody knows until here. But what not many people know, well, that's what we're aiming for, of course. We want people to be wealthy. We want them to enjoy clean water. We want them to have enough food, warm clothes, a safe home, a good education, medical care, a meaningful job, a secure environment, and a functioning infrastructure. This is what we are aiming for. We want to end poverty, and we want wealthy people. And it works. It really works. Until the year 2030, it is expected that the consuming middle class will almost double. And that is what not everybody knows. That would be a huge success in ending poverty. But if you try to achieve this goal with the same economic system we apply now, we will be in real trouble. Because the last time I checked, we hadn't had 3.5 planets. In the year 2100, the planet will be host about 11 billion people. The good news is that basing on the decrease of the global birth rate, 11 billion people will be at the peak. And after that, the population will decrease. So the situation is as follows. Wealth causes our resource problems. But all over the world, we share the vision to increase wealth. And we do everything for it. So should we stop doing that? Of course, the solution is not to stop aiming for a better life. The solution is to cut the correlation between wealth and resource consumption. What we aim for is an economic system with green technology and sustainable product life cycles. So, step one, what is it all about? It is all about resources, and resources are raw materials as well as water and soil and air and everything around us. The increase of the consuming part of the population is much bigger than most people realize. And the solutions we come up with should be a little bit more sophisticated than they are right now. Step two. As we have seen in the first minutes of the presentation, biodegradability is a great option with very few downsides. So why should you doubt anybody who tells you that biodegradability should be the goal and your major sustainability strategy? After step one, you figured out what is it all about resources. This question can be answered quite easily, actually. Because what might work as a one-person solution will become much harder to function for a society, let alone for the whole world. Biodegradability sounds good as a concept, and it sure is. I can deliver no reason that speaks against biodegradability per se. But can biodegradability be the solution in terms of being the key element to our scarcity of resources? Biodegradability does not reduce the amount of waste we create. And biodegradability does not help to solve our resource problems, a problem we have to solve by consuming less resources than we actually do now. When we look at the current consumption and increased production of textile fibers since 1975, we can expect that the need for textile fibers will double until 2030, as we have seen before. And we can't fix this scarcity of resources by just making biodegradable what we throw away. So as long as we don't change our consuming habits, our economical system, the designs of product life cycles, and as long as fast fashion is part of the big picture, creating textiles biodegradable is nothing more than putting lipstick on a pig. So, one-dimensional statements might be right or might be wrong, but even if they're right, that doesn't mean that they should be treated like the sole truth. Everything has upsides and downsides, and we should appreciate them. And that brings us to step three, which is the heart and soul of sustainable product design. To eco-design a product, it usually is not one decision or one aspect that leads to the desired sustainability. A sustainable product takes into account all aspects of a value-added chain, so you have to compose an overall concept that leads to the best possible impact, referring to the whole life cycle of the product and its related environmental system. For that to be realistic, you have to know your value chain and understand the related environmental impacts. And I really want to encourage you to do so, because that is the basic of any sustainable product design. On this slide, you can see a very simplified graphic account of a life cycle of a cotton jacket. It starts with the cultivation of raw material, continues with the processing and the use phase, and ends with the disposal. This cotton jacket, this one, is symbolic, of course. I could have chosen a jacket of any other raw material. The analyzing process is basically the same. But for this simplified example, we go with cotton. So what I want to bring to your attention is that everything is connected with everything. Decisions at one point of the value chain affect the outcome on another point. So we have to analyze and understand the impacts at and for the whole value chain, and the related environment. So we already checked out what's behind the composting process, and we found it to be good. Now let's have a closer look on what lies behind the cotton process, raw material. So, what you have to consider is that nothing's for free. No matter which decision we make about the raw material we use, we have to suffer ecological and social impacts, sometimes more and sometimes less. The better we know them, the better we can control them. If our input material is cotton, for example, we have to worry about water consumption, the use of fertilizer and thus eutrophication of the water, transports and thus emissions of greenhouse gases, excessive use of landmass, and there is climate change, destruction of ecosystems, and change of water availability. And of course, land use competition with, for example, the growing of food or energy plants, pasture, ecosystems, etc. And mind you, textile industry is not the only industry that wants to use renewable resources. Well, and even energy use, of course. The colors of the circles indicate the impact of the respective category for cotton as raw materials, like roughly indicate. Energy consumption, for example, is a minor issue, therefore it's green. Land use competition, water consumption, however, are very important, and therefore they are indicated as red. In total, for this example, cotton gets a deep orange circle because it has some significant impact on the environment. As I said, it's just roughly indicated. So this list of environmental impacts, of course, is not absolute. The dimensions of the impact rely on the respective circumstances and even can be seen as opportunities for improvements, like, for example, the switch to organic cotton production. Let's have a quick look on what happens in the use phase. The use phase of a textile product might have a major impact on the environment, mostly due to the maintenance like washing. There's water consumption and the energy consumption, of course, the use of detergents and the related impacts on the water and its plant and animal life. And depending on the material, microfibers can be a major environmental threat, not with cotton maybe, but with polyester, for example. So in this case, and for the sake of argument, let's just go for an overall orange impact for the use phase. How big of an impact the use phase in relation to the rest of the value-added chain is depends, of course, largely on the lifespan of the product. The longer a product is in use, the more often it will be maintained, and therefore a longer life might cause more environmental impact. That does not mean, of course, to shorten the product's lifespan. In the contrary, I just want to say that we have to understand that the impact of the phases depends on their significance for the overall lifespan. For the total environmental impact of a product, it of course makes a hell of a difference if you just use a jacket for about 2 months or like for 10 years. If you use it for 2 months, like fast fashion, the impact of the raw material, production process, and disposal have a huge impact of the life cycle. And the impacts of the maintenance, even though they might be bad, are hardly important. The impacts of the raw materials, however, are absolutely dominant in this scenario. So we could make this jacket biodegradable all we want, we wouldn't produce a sustainable product. On the other hand, if we use the jacket for like 10 years, what environmentally matters most is the maintenance of the product, in most cases. So, we have to ask, what is happening? At which point of the value chain? To what impact and to which extent? And just then, we go for solutions, and not the other way around. Maybe you have noticed that I not yet have color indicated the circle of the biodegradation process. That is because even if the process per se is good, does not mean that it is mandatorily the best decision for a sustainable life cycle. The circular economy demands that every material should be kept at its highest quality level possible, at all times. And as it is so important, I'll repeat it. The goal of the circular economy is not to create some sort of cycles. The goal is to keep the highest quality possible, to keep value at all times. So when we create a product, we put lots of effort in it. And when the product biodegrades, this effort just goes poof. And the result of this poof might contain lots of minerals, and it might be fertilizer for valuable renewable resources. But it also loses the effort that is part of the products. And if this effort has not amortized yet, the material is not kept at its highest quality level. So if you have the chance to recycle your material or make it recyclable, you might want to take that chance for the sake of a low resource consumption. Because if you by all means and brute force make your product biodegradable, you might be just barking up the wrong tree. So don't optimize just parts of your value chain. Aim for the optimal life cycle impact. And don't force a solution that might does not fit for this product system. So when should biodegradability be part of your sustainable product strategy? We have lots of options to design sustainable products, all of them with various upsides and downsides. The art is now to create a value chain and a product life cycle that fits all the customer's needs and thus is an asset for the company, and to be most sustainable at the same time. To achieve that, we start the development at the design phase of the product and with its requirements. That might be designed for a long life cycle or for a long product life. That might be designed for modularity or also designed for biodegradability. The other decisions, like about the optimal raw materials or the maintenance or the end of the life, follow that lead. So biodegradability should be part of our sustainable product development plan if it supports the goal of resource prevention better than any other solution, if it prevents harm we otherwise would do to the environment, like, for example, microfibers, or if the product or parts of the product are likely to happen end up in the environment. So I hope I could inspire you a little bit. Even so, I was quite nervous. Never have been that nervous ever before. I really hope I could inspire you to develop sustainable products and just to start eco-design. If you need help with that, actually, I'm not that nervous. And you just call me. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to performancedays.com. Copyright April 2017 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.